It's 1833, and King Fernando VII has passed away, leaving behind him a legacy of 20 years of unsteady, tumultuous events in Spain, plagued by years of political instability, the virtual collapse of Spain's empire for the most part, though that was not really his fault. And a whole lot of uncertainty. And on top of that, just before that, you had the invasion of Spain by Napoleon's troops and a 7-year war of independence. So it had been a rough start to the century, the 19th century for Spain. In any event, his daughter would become the next sovereign. She was only 3 at the time, or was just about to be 3, and her claim was already being contested by her angry uncle, Carlos. Now, what was this all about? It was about laws, rights, claims to the throne, and power struggles. You see, ever since the Bourbons came to power in Spain at the beginning of the 18th century, they brought with them the Salic Law, which required a male heir. If none were born directly from the king, a male sibling was next in line. And that, in theory, would have been Carlos. But in 1830, Fernando announced his pragmatic sanction, that was the decree, which permitted his daughter Isabel to become queen regnant, that is, a queen with the authority of a king. The decision would trigger a major rift in Spain and result in a civil war that would last from 1833 to 1840 and would go down in history as the First Carlist War. You can surmise from the name that there would be sequels. But before we get to that, let's look at Isabel's reign overall. To begin with, Isabel II, to date, is the only queen regnant since Spain unified. That will probably change when the current king, Felipe VI, gives up the throne for whatever reason, and his daughter, Leonor, who is the Princess of Asturias, will become Spain's next monarch. If nothing happens to the monarchy before that. Now, you may think that there was another Isabel, the famous Isabella, the Catholic of Columbus fame, but she did not rule over all of Spain, only Castile. So, this is one thing that makes Isabel II stand out from the crowd. Isabel's reign would last from 1833 to 1868 when she was forced to abdicate and left the country. Isabel also ruled during one of Spain's most sort of wobbly times. If many people, including me, find Spanish history complicated to follow, this, my friends, is a time when it gets about as complicated as you can imagine. Even for Spaniards, it's like one of those periods that you just want to sort of skip over until you get to the end of the century. But it's there and we can't avoid it. And it's actually a pretty interesting period, but it's hugely complex. So what I will do is do my best to make it easier for you to understand. In general, this is a time when the Spanish monarchy is sort of making a mainly definitive shift towards a constitutional monarchy setup. The days of autocracy, of absolute rulers, are all but ending, but the change will be slow and it won't be easy. Now, there were several phases during this period, during this reign. As we said, Isabel II wasn't even 3 years old. She was just about to turn 3 when she was officially proclaimed Queen of Spain. Her mother, Maria Cristina, Fernando VII's fourth wife, took over as regent until Isabel would be old enough to reign on her own, or at least that was the plan. It wouldn't end up being that way. But as I was telling you at the beginning of this podcast, those were complicated times. Her uncle, Carlos Maria of Molina, Fernando's brother, was busy rallying support mainly in the north of Spain in his attempt to take the throne away from his niece. This support came from many of the conservative sectors of society, conservative Catholics, traditional rural inhabitants, pro-absolute monarchists, basically many who yearned for the days of yore when the classic style of regime dominated Spain and much of Europe. So in some ways, this was sort of a last-ditch effort to save the country from modernizing. On top of that, it was mainly the Basques and the Navarrans and the people from Catalonia, the Catalans, who defended this cause. So certainly some regional interests, regional privileges known as fueros, and so on were also at stake. These are movements that in some ways still affect us today. So anyway, an all-out civil war broke out. Unfortunately for Carlos, the army stayed for the most part with Maria Cristina and by association Isabel, and he and his troops were forced to revert to guerrilla warfare to avoid taking on a superior side on an open battlefield. Fighting carried on for 7 years until 1840, and Isabel was finally victorious. During these years, Spain came up with a new constitution in 1837 and also passed a controversial law in 1835, which in many ways has affected this country's heritage up until this day. This was the controversial Mendizábal, as they say in Spanish, confiscation law. It was called the Desamortización de Mendizábal, in which the state basically seized or took control of vast amounts of property that originally belonged to the church, convents, monasteries, properties that were in some cases abandoned, others that were understaffed, and they seized land that the government felt was underused. And then they offered it up for auction to allow private owners to find a solution. Basically, that meant more power and more land for the country's wealthiest, since they were the only ones who could really pay for it. Some of these changes were successful, and even today we can see them. But many of these people sort of sold off the contents of what they bought, so much furniture, so many items of art, sculpture of very important artistic value were either destroyed or lost forever. And some of the churches and monasteries and convents were left basically to disappear. It's something that you hear about over and over when you make visits, historical visits, that some place was doing great until this period and things changed a lot. I can think of a couple of perfect examples not far from Madrid. So that was one thing. Anyway, Maria Cristina quit her role as regent in 1840. In her place, a military officer named Baldomiro Espartero took over. He was more liberally minded. He was a popular man in Spain, a self-made individual who earned the admiration of the working class and the suspicion of the conservative sectors. But anyway, he served as prime minister until 1843 when he was removed. And that was the very same year Isabel was granted full powers at the tender age of 13, and hardly a moment to take on the challenges of a very divided Spain. But there you have it. And I think this fact most likely influenced the effectiveness of her reign, which wasn't always the best. I also think that in a lot of ways, she just wasn't right for the job. She wasn't the right person. She had other interests in mind other than ruling the country. These were strange times. Politically speaking, these leaders of the new governments were broken up into two major parties, the moderates or moderados, who would be considered the conservative party, basically center-right in terms of ideology. And then you have the liberal party, the progresistas. there were a number of famous people. They were basically generals, names like Narvaez, Serrano, and O'Donnell, pronounced O'Donnell in Spanish. It's an Irish-sounding name because it is an Irish surname, but he was Spanish. And they sort of rotated in terms of taking power as prime ministers. The governments changed constantly, or the cabinets. During this period, some 40 cabinets were formed. By that, I'm talking about groups of ministers with a prime minister, administrations, basically. Prime ministers lasted sometimes no longer than a few weeks, or sometimes a few months, maybe 6 months, maybe a year. If they lasted a couple of years, that was almost record-breaking time. Many of the major streets in Madrid are named after these people, especially the ones I just mentioned, Narvaez, Serrano, y O'Donnell. They debated policy and even constitutional matters. They argued over the role of the monarchy and the parliament. For the most part, they were the Moderados, the center-right party, but there were moments when the liberals, the progresistas, took over. An especially important time where that was a two-year period during the 1850s. And on a number of occasions, these changes of government came as a result of the famous military interventions, basically coup d'etats, but they were known as pronunciamientos, classic Spanish coup d'etats. They're not major military violent attacks overthrowing the government. Basically, a general comes in and says, "I'm the man in charge and I'm going to do things the way I think is best for the country." And there were some 18 in all during this period, at least some that were plotted, others carried out. And this is sort of the way of handling national politics over that period. And in fact, later it will return again and again, and even up until our lifetime. This is sort of the MO of Spanish politics up until the current democratic period. But we'll get to that when the time comes. Isabel would struggle throughout her time as queen to earn the favor and support of her subjects for both political and personal reasons. One factor that influenced Isabel's image was her scandalous personal life. This poor woman, on one hand, had a tough beginning. She was pretty much forced to marry her cousin, a man named Francisco de Assis, who was almost for sure was homosexual, and so that he rarely carried out his functions as a husband to her. As a result, she sought solace in the arms of reportedly numerous lovers, and so many, in fact, that it's sort of hard to keep track of them all and know if any of them or who was the father of her many children. Her promiscuity would be the talk of town, the talk of the country, quite possibly rivaling the reputation of Catherine the Great. It would also contribute to her demise. Anyway, what else happened during her reign? Well, a second Carlist war, Carlist conflict, arose in 1848, which was also a difficult time throughout Europe. The revolutions of 1848. Here in Spain, it was Carlos's son, who was also named Carlos, who claimed the throne that his father had claimed to be unrightfully taken from him. It was a brief war, a lot smaller than the first one, and the theater of operations were shifted mainly to Catalonia. Once again, Isabel's side prevailed. In the 1850s, I believe it was 1852, she would suffer and survive an assassination attempt by a priest. So a lot of people were against her. Now, what was Spain like at this time? I think it's important to talk about this. It was still very heavily rural, agriculturally based. In many ways, it was behind many of its European neighbors, obviously Great Britain, but also France and Germany and other northern European countries. Germany didn't exist as a nation yet, but many of those regions up there. And this is a stretch of time, by that all the way to the early 20th century, which is often seen as a very weak period for Spain economically. The traditional opinion is that the Industrial Revolution arrived late here and was basically a failure. Now, it is true that things got started a little bit later, but closer inspection of the data suggests that there was more economic growth than what is generally given credit for. The problem is it's very uneven. There wasn't a lot of capital. The average person didn't have a lot of money, a lot of money to spare on consumption. So that affected the amount of production that was done, because if I'm manufacturing something that no one's going to buy, why am I going to do that? And on top of that, exports were pretty small compared to other countries. But it did come slowly. Industry grew more steadily in the second half of the 20th century, especially in Catalonia, where there was a textile sector that was doing pretty well. Textile would also become important in other parts of the country. You had iron, iron production, iron exports, and later on steel production with the help of foreign investment. And that grew especially in the Basque Country. And then in the northern part of Spain, in the region of Asturias, mining was also very important. But overall, infrastructure was poor. The roads were dreadfully in need of repair. The railroad got a slow start. I mean, not too slow. The first was built in Barcelona to Mataró in 1848. It got going at first and then it sort of slowed down. This was also a time when the seeds of nationalism were sown and began to germinate. In part, this was brought on by a renewed interest in the different regions, especially the regions that had their own language, their own culture, and historically their own kingdom at some point, or some semi-autonomous situation. We're talking about Catalonia, Galicia, and the Basque Country. These movements were still in their infant stages, but they would continue to grow and grow, and they are still actively influencing Spain's domestic situation today. Anyway, in 1868, Isabel's popularity hit an all-time low. Isabel's delicate reputation was shattered, and the local satirical magazines published sometimes extremely graphic illustrations of her and multiple lovers, sometimes including her husband. And she was also linked to some pretty shady business deals. The population, the people, got tired of the Bourbons and demanded that she depart, which she did that very same year. This became known as the Glorious Revolution of 1868. She would leave for France, where she would live for the rest of her life until 1904. This time it was another general, General Prim, who sort of led this efforts to depose the queen and to shift Spain in another direction. And it began what was a 6-year period of transition. Spain was still quite in favor of a monarchy, and the Cortes, the parliament, said they would need a new monarch. And so they proceeded to look for a replacement, but it wasn't that easy. Few royal families were interested in accepting a throne of a nation in decline. I mean, they actually offered this throne to them, and it was turned down. Even a throne with the illustrious past that Spain had, but at this time, no one really wanted to get involved. But finally, the services of an Italian, a member of the House of Savoy, were called in. This was a man named Amadeus, and he would become Amadeus the First. And he ruled for little more than 2 years, and then he would leave his post. As unpopular as ever, the guy was never accepted very much in Spanish society, and he was also convinced that Spain was impossible to govern. And to this day, there are those who see it the same way. Anyway, his departure was followed by the establishing of the First Republic. That means there was no monarchy, which lasted for also just a couple of years. At the same time, there was the Third Carlist War, and then there was the restoration of the Bourbon dynasty under Isabel's son, Alfonso, who would become Alfonso XII. But I will tell you more about that in the next episode. That will be all for today's episode of Spanish History 101, brought to you by Brian Spain Domain. We hope you've enjoyed it. Please leave us any questions or comments because we love the feedback. You can subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Amazon, and Castos, or you can also check us out on our YouTube channel and subscribe. Or if you wish to support Brian Spain Domain, we greatly appreciate it. We work very hard to provide you with the very best information about Spain, Spanish history, and Spanish culture. You can do so by clicking on our PayPal donate button on our website. Or if you want to have access to absolutely all of our podcasts and support us regularly, you can check us out on Patreon at the link provided below. Stay well, stay safe, and hasta pronto.